It's Tuesday, November 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Belgium remains on high alert for terrorism. The U.S. and French presidents are planning how best to deal with Islamic State.
We need to support those countries that are the most vulnerable to epidemics to build their capacity so that they can diagnose locally and promptly.
Also ahead, medical experts hope to learn from the latest Ebola outbreak. Music icon Loretta Lynn, we have a new tribute. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. Belgium, headquarters of European Union and NATO institutions, remains on its highest state of alert, with schools and the Brussels metro system closed amid fears of a repeat of the terrorist attacks that killed 130 and wounded hundreds in Paris on November 13th. A police dragnet failed to apprehend a ringleader of those attacks, Salah Abdeslam. In Albania Sunday, European Union President Donald Tusk called the fight against extremists the biggest challenge of our time.
I deeply believe that terrorists will not intimidate us, and because, in fact, freedom and solidarity is much stronger than fear and violence. It's also our political obligation to be together against this dramatic challenge, maybe the biggest one in our times.
The UN Security Council on Friday unanimously authorized all necessary measures to fight jihadist violence, including mass killings in Mali, Tunisia, Beirut, and the downing of a Russian jetliner over Sinai. Monash University European Union analyst Ben Wellings in Australia told VOA's Victor Beatty the security lockdown in Belgium is closely tied to the Paris attacks.
The attackers in Paris did come from Belgium, and Belgian society has some of the same issues, if you like, around integration or accommodation or facilitation of minorities, particularly Muslim minorities, as France does. Not exactly the same, but not dissimilar. So in some ways it is linked to deeper themes within Belgian and Western European society. So what it seems, though, of course, is that one of the attackers has fled back to Belgium, and this is what's given the very specific, credible claim to the security crisis that we're now seeing.
Well, French President Hollande will embark on a diplomatic offensive in coming days, trying to forge a broad coalition against the Islamic State. How successful do you think he will be in forging some sort of a grand coalition?
Of course, you know, initially everyone will support this initiative. The question is to what extent and how much will that involve military cooperation, particularly on the ground. First thing to do is that David Cameron is very keen to get involved in Syria, but back in 2013 this was blocked by the Labour Party, and that means that Britain's only been involved in Iraq. It may be blocked by the Labour Party again. Barack Obama will be very receptive, but opinion in America is not favourable towards a sort of a boots-on-the-ground escalation, so that will be a difficulty there. Germany, typically reluctant to get involved beyond its own borders, even if it did have forces under NATO command in Afghanistan and Kosovo. But again, a reluctance there. The interesting thing is Russia. To what extent will France pull Russia into this orbit? So what kind of French-led coalition against ISIS will eventuate will be interesting to see, and it may be a kind of an unusual set of bedfellows that may prosecute this, all in the context of some political agreement in Syria.
This imminent threat level is in Belgium, which is at the heart of European Union institutions. What likely impact will this threat by Islamic State in the wake of the Paris attacks have on European Union unity, as well as their common response to the Islamic State?
European Union, if you like, under some sort of stress from the collusion and the linkage between the unprecedented migration that we've seen since the summer and the months and years preceding that, but also the suggestion that one of the attackers had used these refugee migrations to disguise his entry back into Europe from Syria. So this is where the tension lies, and the problem is the kind of the sharing of refugee quotas across the EU. So there is some political risk here for the Schengen zone, the treaty that governs the free movement of peoples within 26 of the 28 member states of the EU. In terms of a coordinated response, of course, the EU doesn't really have the hard security elements that member states like Britain, France, and all the others have at the member state level. But it is trying to attempt a kind of a response to the refugee crisis. And it may be positioned to facilitate some sort of diplomatic support for the attempts to bring about a negotiated peace in Syria, which is at the heart of these particular problems.
The French and Russians say they have stepped up attacks on Islamic State targets in Syria. Meanwhile, U.S. envoy to the global anti-IS coalition, Brett McGurk, says dozens of U.S. Special Operations Forces will be deployed to northern Syria very soon to train, advise, and assist Arab forces fighting the Islamic State and isolating the de facto IS capital of Raqqa. We turn now to our social media segment with International Edition's G. Abby Lee. She's right here in Studio 22 to talk about the GOP presidential contender, Donald Trump. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
Well, it appears he's in the hot seat again. Mm-hmm. What's it all about this time?
It's about an image he tweeted Sunday which contains false data about black crime. The image he tweeted alleges that 97% of African Americans were killed by African Americans, whereas only 1% of them were killed by police. It also claims 81% of whites who have been victims of murder are killed by blacks, which many people view as race baiting. The information is attributed to the Crime Statistics Bureau in San Francisco and reflects 2015 data.
Well, how do we know that this information is incorrect?
Where do I begin? For one thing, there is no such institution called a Crime Statistics Bureau. So here's a tip for anyone who aspires to run for the top office in the United States of America. If you have never heard of an institution, look it up before quoting it. Also, it's only November. How can we have a 2015 data when we're still in 2015?
Well, that's good advice not only for politicians, but for journalists. Mm-hmm. The federal government conducts that same study every year. What's the latest data?
The FBI is in charge of the data, and in 2014, 14% of white Americans were killed by black Americans, not 81%. And more than 82% of whites were killed by other whites, not 16%, like Trump's false image argued.
So both whites and blacks are mostly murdered by their same ethnicity. Mm-hmm. What kind of response is the controversial tweet getting?
A reply from University of Chicago's Professor Harold Pollack is getting a lot of likes, and he's on Twitter at Harold Pollack. Pollack tweeted, "Your figure to the right is incorrect. The bar graph which he tweeted shows correct FBI figures for 2011 homicides. That data shows similar results like the one I just told you, with roughly 80% of both white and black victims of homicide killed by their own kind." Jim?
Well, always good to do fact-checking, and we thank you, G, for looking into that for us. She tweets for our VOA International Edition Twitter account, at VOA_IE, and you can also follow her on her own account, at G. Abby Lee. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. French President François Hollande will meet Tuesday here in Washington with President Barack Obama as part of a multi-nation tour seeking to spur action against Islamic State militants and a push for political settlement to Syria's civil war. The White House said the two leaders will discuss further cooperation as part of the U.S.-led coalition that has been conducting airstrikes against Islamic State targets in Iraq and Syria for more than a year. VOA White House correspondent Aru Pandey now joins me right here in the studio with more.
Well, obviously, this is the first time that the two men are meeting since those attacks. We saw Kerry travel to Paris and meet there with French officials. But this will really be a time, the White House says, for the U.S. to again show its solidarity and friendship with France. Obama is called the oldest ally of the United States. And when asked during the White House briefing what deliverables will come from this meeting, the White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest said he didn't want to downplay the significance of these expressions of solidarity and support. And obviously, the fight against the Islamic State militant group will be front and center. This is part of Hollande's. He met with British Prime Minister Cameron today, talking about the fight, with Cameron pledging to take the issue of airstrikes in Syria to the British Parliament. From the White House, Hollande will then meet with Putin. And that will also, so he's really trying to see if he can, if everyone can join forces in this fight. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of this meeting.
And that meeting with David Cameron, especially important because now we have a more staunch British support in this coalition. The meeting with Putin would be quite interesting because Russia has taken quite a bit of criticism for its involvement in Syria and some of the placements of its airstrikes, which they claimed were against ISIS, but the West is disputes.
That's right. And when asked about Russia, the press secretary at the White House basically said that Russia is undermining efforts to reach a political settlement in Syria. What the White House has repeatedly said, he kind of countered the notion that Russia is trying to peel off some of the coalition members in this anti-ISIL coalition. He's saying, look, the United States has been leading this effort. We've pulled more than our own weight. We're continuing to do so. And basically, we're supporting what some of what France has done, launching its own airstrikes after the Paris attacks. But the White House was pretty critical, as per usual, of Russia and Russia's efforts, saying we haven't really seen a change in their strategy and their until they focus their efforts on the Islamic State. We don't know how much they'll do. And so we welcome their contributions, but if they're willing to change their focus, and so far we haven't seen evidence of that.
Aru Pandey covers the White House for VOA, and thank you so much for taking a little bit of time out of your busy schedule for us.
Thank you for having me.
And be sure to check out her web story on this at our website, voanews.com. A panel of experts says major reforms of the global health system are needed if the world is to avoid a repeat of the Ebola epidemic that swept across West Africa back in 2014 and also earlier this year. The investigation, convened by the Harvard Global Health Institute and the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, says the slow response cost thousands of lives. We hear more now from Henry Ridgewell in London.
More than 11,000 people died as the Ebola virus spread across Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone, with minor outbreaks in a handful of other African countries. The investigation into the global response describes immense human suffering, fear, and chaos, and criticizes a lack of political leadership. Professor Peter Piot was part of the team that discovered the Ebola virus in what was then Zaire in 1976 and chaired the report into the latest outbreak.
We need to support those countries that are the most vulnerable to epidemics to build their capacity so that they can diagnose locally and promptly and also organize the response through health education and whatever measures have to be put in place.
The report says the biggest single failure was the World Health Organization's delay in sounding the alarm on the outbreak.
And as a result, many people died unnecessarily that could have been prevented. That means a better equipped, a more efficient, a more responsive WHO, World Health Organization, and also a system that brings a more accountability, that we know where the money is going, that we know which states are doing what they promised to do.
Since the outbreak, promising vaccines have been developed against Ebola. Piot says thousands of lives could have been saved with earlier investment. Last month, the three worst affected countries celebrated the first week none of them had experienced any new infections. But in recent days, there have been several new cases in Liberia.
We've discovered now, which is something we didn't know, that people, men, can excrete the virus in their seminal fluid for 6-7 months, that there may be persistence of the virus in the body. So all that is very new.
Piot says those new developments make the reforms even more urgent to prevent a future pandemic. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Loretta Lynn is known as the First Lady of Country Music, and she's receiving a new award in honor of her many decades of country hits. International Edition's Sarah Williams speaks with Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong about this latest tribute.
The 2015 Billboard Women in Music Awards takes place December 11th in New York City. It's a ceremony that's continuing to develop and grow. This year, they've added a new award, the first ever Billboard Women in Music Legend Award. Country icon Loretta Lynn will be its first recipient. Nikki Strong of VOA Music is here to talk about it. Nikki, this is a huge honor. Tell us about Loretta Lynn's legacy.
Okay, Loretta is awesome. She's a trailblazer. Her work is marked with fearlessness and honesty. She became a part of the country music scene in the 1960s. Now, as a songwriter, she wrote about whatever she wanted, as long as it spoke to other women, and many of her songs were autobiographical. So her songs focused a lot on blue-collar women's issues. She talked about cheating men and persistent mistresses, both of which she dealt with in her marriage. She wrote about many things that were considered scandalous, too. She sang about birth control in her song The Pill, double standards for men and women, being widowed after the draft during the Vietnam War in her song, for example, Dear Uncle Sam, she talked about or sang about the loss of teenage virginity. Consequently, many country radio stations actually banned her music. But she continued to persevere, and she became one of the major legends who continued to lay the groundwork for many of the country artists that you see today, female and otherwise. In 1976, she released her autobiography, Coal Miner's Daughter. It became the number one bestseller, making her the first country music artist to make the New York Times bestseller list. This opened the door for tons of other country artists to write books. And then in 1980, her autobiography, The Coal Miner's Daughter, became an Oscar-winning film. And in the early 1980s, she became the first American female recording artist to chart over 50 top 10 hits. She has been inducted. I mean, it's extensive. She's been inducted into more music halls of fame than any other female recording artist. In 2010, she received the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award for her 50 years in country music. President Barack Obama honored her with a Presidential Medal of Freedom. She was also a recipient of the Kennedy Center Honor in 2003, and she is also the first female country artist to receive a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in 1977. So the awards, the honors, the hit songs are extensive. And her partnership, I would be remiss if I didn't include this. Her partnership with Conway Twitty was quite prosperous and filled with tons of accomplishments as well. They are the most successful and most awarded male-female duet team in country music history.
Now, she's about to release a new CD as well.
Yeah, I think this is perfect timing. So this will be her first solo album in more than 10 years. It's called Full Circle. It's set to drop March 4th. It'll be a little bit of the old and a little bit of the new. According to a press release, the project takes listeners on a journey through Loretta's musical story, from the Appalachian folk songs and gospel music she learned as a child to new interpretations of her classic hits and country standards to songs newly written for the project. So I know it includes a duet with Willie Nelson and a song with Elvis Costello. Also, on the same day that Full Circle is released, a new documentary about her life and career is going to air on PBS. It's called American Masters, Loretta Lynn, Still a Mountain Girl. So that will happen March 4th as well. And Full Circle is now available on pre-order, too.
Well, you can hear more about country music with Nikki Strong on Country Hits USA on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki on Facebook at VOA Music and on Twitter at VOA underscore music. Thanks a lot, Nikki.
Thank you.
Well, I was born to coal miner's daughter in a cabin on a hill in Butcher Holler. We were poor, but we had love. That's the one thing.
You've been listening to International Edition, and you can find us at our very own website, that's voanews.com. Any time of the day or night you'd like to click on and listen to our programs, or just check out what's going on, it's always updated. You can also follow us on Twitter at VOA underscore IE. Email us if you like, our address, voaasia at voanews.com. We always love hearing from our listeners. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. We thank you so much for joining us. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
World Fisheries Day is celebrated every November to draw attention to the big business of illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. Also known as IUU fishing, every year it rakes in some $10 billion globally. Such fishing undermines efforts to conserve and manage our fish stocks. Too often, illegal fishermen use harmful fishing practices and equipment, damaging fragile marine ecosystems and vulnerable species such as coral reefs, turtles, and seabirds, and reduce the natural productivity of fisheries. Poachers and illegal fishermen take fish that could be caught and sold by local fishermen. They pay no taxes or license fees, so they can sell their fish cheaper, undercutting legal fishermen. In this way, they reduce the productivity and income of legitimate fishers, threatening food security and economic stability in many parts of the world. And they ignore fishing limits, fishing bans, and protected areas that are meant to maintain fish populations at sustainable levels, and don't report their catches to be counted in management schemes. Indeed, large-scale IUU fishing operations are the main reason why more than half of the world's major fishing grounds have been depleted. One of the ways we can stop illegal fishing is to deny illegal fishermen access to markets. In early November, President Barack Obama signed into law the Illegal, Unreported, and Unregulated Fishing Enforcement Act, which denies illegal fishing vessels access to our ports and port services, and so prevents illegally caught fish from entering legitimate markets. The next step is to continue coordinating with other countries that are taking similar steps and join the global effort to ratify and implement the Port State Measures Agreement, an international measure to keep IUU fishermen and their illegal product out of all markets. The passage of this legislation is a critical step forward, but our fight against IUU fishing doesn't stop here, said Secretary of State John Kerry. But no single nation can police the entire sea, so the United States will begin to implement Sea Scout, an initiative aimed at enhancing global coordination, information sharing, and enforcement on illegal fishing across the oceans to help ensure that not a bit of it is beyond the law, said Secretary of State Kerry. Working together, we can safeguard a healthy ocean and its bountiful resources for future generations.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.